Welcome to Your Career Cure podcast, where amazing professionals and entrepreneurs share their inspirational stories so you can get a dose of a happy career, happy life. And now your host, Gail Tolstoy Miller.
So welcome to another episode of Your Career Cure. And I am so pleased to introduce Jeff Harry. Very interesting. And you're going to see, I'm so excited for this podcast today. He is. Well, the reason why he's so excited is because he is a positive psychology play speaker. Try saying that. He's also recently named top 100 HR influencers of 2020. So Jeff, welcome. Fill in the blanks, please. Let us know what a positive, I'm going to say it again, positive psychologist play speaker is.
Yes, absolutely. So Jeff Harry, positive psychology play speaker. I run an organization called Rediscover Your Play, where I actually combine positive psychology and play to help teams navigate really difficult conversations in order to create a psychologically safe workspace using a play-oriented approach. To give background on like who I am, right. I will tell you the Batman origin story. That's probably the best way to doing it. So when I was in third grade, I saw the movie Big with Tom Hanks. And I love that movie. And in that movie, he basically was playing with toys for a living. And I was like, you can do that as a job? So as soon as I saw that movie, I started writing toy companies that day. Like in
really?
Third grade. Yeah. And I just kept writing them. I wrote them all throughout high school, all the way into college. At one point, someone wrote me back and was like, you should major in mechanical engineering. I should not have listened to that company because they went out of business. But whatever.
What were you sending to them?
So I was writing them at first question, like just letters that were like, hire me. That was it. That was all.
And you were in third grade?
Third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade.
Did they hire you?
No, of course not. No, because I was writing on my word processor. That dates me, right? And then I started writing these 5-page letters with all of my ideas on them. And I would submit it. So I don't even think they knew how old I was, you know? And if this was the age of Twitter, I probably would have had them, you know, they would have brought me to the toy company and given me a tour. But this, I was just getting all these like letters back, just fake, you know, those crappy letters that are like, thank you for your interest, because I think they thought I was an adult. Anyway.
So you never told them you were a child. Did your parents have any idea you were doing this?
My mom did. Yeah, she would drop me. She would take me to the post office every week and let me drop off my 5 letters in the mail to places, because I would send one letter. It would be too thick, so I'd have to put more stamps on it. And then I would send 4 of the exact same letter just in case it got lost. So I was spamming before spam was a thing.
You were a hustler. You were
didn't
hustling.
Know what I was doing, right? Right?
Oh, so, my God. That's
so
awesome.
Anyway, that eventually led me to eventually get in the toy industry. I even remember writing a letter. I was telling you earlier, I worked for the Toys R Us Corporation. I wrote them a letter a long time ago, basically saying, you need to open up your toys inside the store and have people play with them, and you're more likely to sell more. And I wrote out this whole plan of how to do it. And that got me an interview with that organization, which eventually led to a job with them. So I was just like playing, you know, and I finally,
did you go to college?
Yeah. I went to Tufts University, majored in mechanical engineering.
Oh, you know, so you did. Okay.
Yeah. So then I graduated, got into the toy industry. And I don't know if you've ever gotten exactly what you've always wanted and then been so disappointed when you get there, but that's how I felt working at these toy companies. Like, you know, padded walls, no high fives, no fun, no play, just not enjoyable at all. They might as well have been selling like socks or pillows.
Really?
Like, it didn't really matter what they were selling. So I remember leaving New York, because I was working in New York and New Jersey, coming to the Bay Area, bumping into an organization that taught kids engineering with Lego. So they basically were just playing for a living, seven people, found it on Craigslist, a joke of a job, $150 an hour, or not an hour, $150 a week. I'm sorry, like nothing. But they were playing and I was like, wait a minute, I could make this into something. And I turned it from seven people into 400 people. And I helped build one of the largest Lego-inspired STEM organizations like in the US. Wow. And we did it all by playing. Like, we had no idea what we were doing. No business plan. We picked cities we thought were fun. We picked people we thought were fun. We failed miserably all the time. We experimented all the time. And because I was in the Bay Area, we started teaching 100,000 kids a year at one point. That we got attention of Silicon Valley, Facebook, Google, Adobe, PayPal, Netflix, all of those orgs. And they were like, do you team building events? We're like, yeah, of course we do. No, we didn't. We just said yes to everything. And then I ended up running team building events for the top tech companies in the world for the next decade. And what I found that was the biggest issue for them was they spoke about innovation. They spoke about disruption. They spoke about taking risks. All the posters on the wall, right? Not doing any of that because they had not created psychologically safe spaces for people to take risks, for people to actually play.
So is it safe innovation? So, I mean, these companies are innovating, so you think they would take risks?
I didn't feel they took enough big risks. They're still, even at the Googles, there still was like a lack of psychological safety in many of the teams that we would do these workshops with. So I created Rediscover Your Play to address the bigger issue, which is navigating those hard conversations. How do you deal with toxicity at work? How do you deal with office politics? How do you deal with passive aggressiveness? How do you have hard conversations? How do you deal with inner critic? How do you get your staff in flow? Like all that stuff that like we don't talk about, but is what is getting in the way of innovation, actual innovation and trust and safety. I'm now doing that with Rediscover Your Play.
That's awesome. So how does that work exactly? So is it physical? Is it games? Is it on the computer? How does it manifest?
So a lot of times when we're running workshops, like I run a workshop with my friend Gary Ware called Dealing with Toxicity at Work Through Play. But the actual name that we got when we got into South by Southwest and Inbound and a bunch of in this conference in Australia called Pause Fest, it was called Dealing with A-holes at Work Through Play.
Oh, I love that.
Right. And it was like, yo, there are people that are toxic that are getting in the way of everything. Why are we not addressing this issue, right? So when we ran this, I ran this recently for the Department of Homeland Security of all places, you know, for a small, you know, outfit of theirs. And it's all about actually practicing what you would say to someone. How do you say something in a way where you're not attacking their character, but you're addressing their behavior? How do you actually set boundaries at work so that people don't act that way and people don't feel like they are allowed to act that way, right? A lot of the stuff that we have is there's such a lack of communication. There's so many assumptions, so much lack of clarity, and we just tiptoe around all of it. And it's worse now that we're remote. People are talking less. We're having less meetings. The meetings that we are having are really wasteful meetings, right? So it's just like we're not really having the real conversations so that actual trust is being built so we can show up more fully to work. And if we were actually allowed to play more at work, and I can explain what that looks like, you know, then you're going to get more out of your staff. You're going to boost morale. You're going to boost productivity. But more importantly, you're just going to have a more enjoyable time going to work.
You know, it's amazing because I think that most of us know what we're supposed to do in corporate America to make it better. But somehow, it's not that hard. I think it's pretty logical, right? If you ask an 8-year-old, how do you think corporate America should be run? How should people treat each other?
Right.
They would get the right answer.
Right.
We would get the right answer.
Right.
Most people, unless you're a complete a-hole, right? We're talking about a-hole. But somehow we get in our own way. And I think that a lot of times, the company, the corporate culture that you're in, you almost become part of that. And you become that part of that culture, right?
Yeah.
So you come in all fine and dandy. And then you realize, oh my gosh, this corporate culture is horrible. But yet in order to survive, you start becoming that. Yeah. You start getting acclimated to it.
Right. But here's the ironic part. The people that have been part of those companies for a really, really long time also don't like the culture, right? Like nobody likes it and no one knows how it got to where it got. It's almost like a messy room where you're like, who made this mess? I don't know who made this mess, but at this point, do we still continue to blame and try to point fingers, or do we just clean it up at this point? Right.
It's almost like groupthink. It's like everybody's like, it's almost like everybody doesn't like something, but no one really wants to say, I don't like it.
Right.
And then one person says it and it's like, oh my gosh, I agree with you too. You feel that way too?
Yeah.
And then
before
you know, you got a whole room of people saying, I don't like it either. But so yet this whole time, everyone's just going along with the herd, right?
Going along with the herd and going along with something that nobody appreciates. Besides the a-hole, the toxic person that is just getting to run amok and disrespecting everyone else is just sitting there being like, I guess that's just tolerated here. When like no one wants to tolerate that. So why are we accepting this? And I've been thinking about this more and more, you know, I think the opposite of play, well, Stuart Brown says the opposite of play is depression. It's not actually work, but it's depression. You know, when you're not playing, you're actually in a depressive state, you know, and that's where that's when you lack adaptability, resiliency. This is why certain companies like Blockbuster and Sears go out of business because they're not adaptive, they're not resilient, they're not playing, right?
So but, what is play then? Like, what is your definition of play? Like, it's interesting that you say the opposite of play is depression. I would never in a million years think that that's what it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. I define play as any joyful act where you're fully in the moment, where there is no purpose, there is no result. You don't have regrets about the past. You don't have, you know, anxiety about the future. You are just fully in love with the process, with the moment. You almost forget about time. At work, a lot of times people refer to play as flow. You're in your flow work. You're in your zone of genius, as Gay Hendricks says, or your red thread work, as Marcus Buckingham says. It's the stuff where, like, even if you weren't getting paid, you would do this because it's so much you. It's the thing that actually makes you come alive. Right.
Right. So it's almost like a growth mindset.
It's the growth mindset by
Carol Dweck.
The whole play oriented mindset is growth. I mean, if you think of any kid, they're constantly growing in that mindset. Right. So but what's interesting about what adults do is adults get really fixated on results. Right. And expectations are the thief of joy. That's where a majority of our suffering comes from. So when I think of the opposite of play, I actually think the opposite of play is perfection. I think also the opposite of play is shame, because you can't play when you're feeling shame. And, you know, and if you think of what drives a lot of businesses now, it's shame, right? It's like, did you get your work done? Did you do this? Did you make sure this done? Did we hit our four quarter numbers? Like, it's so fear driven that like, no wonder we can't be innovative, right? Even at the top companies that I was at, I didn't really feel people could fully be themselves. They could be like a little bit of it and take a little bit of risks. But for the most part, they were like, let me just still play it safe here. And I even remember reading a study maybe 5 years ago where they interviewed top executives, people that were like VPs, all across the country at Fortune 500 companies. And they'd be like, how many of you actually share your top ideas with your CEOs or with your bosses? And they were like, 80% were like, we don't. So right now, all the products that we have, or a majority of them, are the mediocre ideas of that product. Like, isn't that ridiculous that we are creating this? Like, there are phones that should last for like 3 months without charging. We don't have those, right? We don't have, because people aren't willing or comfortable enough to be vulnerable enough to share, because they feel as if they're going to get shamed, they're going to get blamed, they might get fired for doing it. And that's just a reality that we're currently in.
So my question to you is, and I know people that are listening are going to say, you know what, this is all BS, okay? I've got to make a living.
Sure.
Just hear me out. I got to make a living. And you know what? What I do, I don't have to love it. I don't have to love what I do. I'm picking up crap every day for a living. How am I going to play with crap? You know what I mean? Like, how am I going to love that? And I'm okay with that.
Right.
How would you answer that?
I would say you don't have to love it, but being that you are at this job, if you're working 50 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, you're working there for 2,500 hours a year. The whole year is around about, I think, 8,000 hours. Your entire year is 8,000 hours, and you're devoting almost a third of it to work. If you were able to figure out what your flow work is at work, it would make all of your work better. It would make you more productive. Your time would pass faster. You'd actually be doing stuff that makes an impact. Or you could just sit there and just hate it for 2,500 hours in the year. But how's that working out for you, right? How is it working out for you before the pandemic? You know, if anything that, you know, this pandemic has done is it's really paused all of our lives to be like, did you enjoy that normal? You know, do you want to go back to that normal? How was that normal? Because right now there's no blueprint for the new normal. There's no blueprint for how you're supposed to do sales after this, how you're supposed to do marketing, how you're supposed to do recruiting, how you're supposed to be a leader in this. It's going to be a totally new world. And if you don't adopt a play-oriented mindset, you are going to be left behind. And when I say, like, this Steven Johnson, this amazing author, says you'll find the future where people are having the most fun. If you look at the businesses that are having the most fun, those are the companies that thrived in 2020. The TikToks, the Hulus, the Netflix, the Disney Pluses, thriving because they were willing to adapt, be resilient, experiment, try a bunch of things out. But if you don't want to do that, if your company's like, hey, we're going to get back to normal, guess what? You might be the next Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Just the reality of
it. Yeah. I mean, it totally makes sense. And I think it does catch up to companies. Companies don't realize it. They become very complacent.
Uh-huh.
And I do think it has to come from the top, though. Because if it doesn't come from the top, then that type of behavior will be allowed and perpetuated. There has to be consequences for this type of toxic behavior in organizations. There has
absolutely
to be. And if it comes from, if it doesn't come from the top, then you're kind of screwed. I mean, unless there's departments that make an effort.
In a way, you can, right? But like I said earlier, when we're running our Dealing with A-Holes at Work workshop through play, what we're doing in that workshop is we're empowering people to be like, look, you can't change what's happening, you know, at the very top. Like, look at the Department of Homeland Security, the group I was working with before. That was last year. They couldn't control who was president. They couldn't control who was the head of the Department of Homeland Security, but they could work with their team.
Right.
They could work with their multitude of teams that are there. Like, what is within your circle of influence? And how do I make an impact on that front? How do I start setting boundaries on that front? How do I start empowering people to be like, don't tolerate that behavior anymore? And let's start setting a rule. Because as the companies that I've worked with, sometimes when I can motivate a team to like build a lot of their work around play or around getting in their flow, they start performing at such a higher rate than other teams that other team leaders are like, what is going on over there? Like, what are they doing that they're making more money, thus making more money for the company, but also making more money for themselves? I want that. You know, my approach of like screaming at my subordinates is not working anymore. And a lot of them are leaving and trying to get to become part of this other team. So maybe I need to change. So I think sometimes we ignore the impact we still can have. And instead tell the story of like, woe is me. There's nothing I can do. And there's always something you can do.
Right. So give me an example. One example of a play that you do in an organization. Is it actual play? Is when you say play, do you mean like actual play, like play exercises?
So I'll give you two different examples. So in our Dealing with A-Holes at Work through play workshop, we actually have people act out what's it like to be that toxic person. because I think a lot of times they don't know what it's like. And when you have them act it out, they're like, oh, some people actually enjoy it. And they're like, oh, is this how this feels? Is this how it feels to be so mean to everyone? And others are like, oh, I hate this. Like, I don't like this at all, you know? And then we actually do role playing of like, what would you say to the person? How would you say it? What would you say if they said this thing back? Like it's interesting that, you know, in football, for example, you know, they prep all week for a 3-hour game. They practice all week for a 3-hour game. But at work, we get no time to practice. We get thrown in right at the beginning and be like, all right, figure it out. You are now a leader. Figure it out. You are now part of this team. Figure out how to connect with everybody. Why wouldn't they be practicing? So we create a playground for people to actually practice actually having hard conversations so that by the time they finish the workshop or multiple workshops, then it's like, I can do this. Okay, I can do this. Like, I've done it. I've actually done it here. So now I can do it out there. And we're not saying it's going to be perfect. You know, they still have to, it's trial and error. And that's the whole part of like play, right? You know, a lot of these things don't get solved after one workshop, but you begin to give people the bravery that they believe they can actually do something they didn't think was possible. In another workshop I run with my friend Lauren Yee called Your Future's Where Your Fun Is, we actually tie what did you love to do as a kid with what you do now? What are the play values that you love to do? So Lauren loved to play sardines as a kid. It's reverse hide and seek. Someone hides, then another person hides, and you just pack in like sardines while one person's looking for like 20 people stuck in a corner. Amazing. You should do it as adults, but don't do it during this time. Afterwards, social distancing, right? But what did she love about it? Creativity, collaboration, connection. Those are her play values. So what work does she do now that incorporates those three play values? She looks at her full day and identify, okay, these are the things that I do, right? And then what I tell a lot of team leaders is identify the work that your staff loves to do most and then be like, what percentage of time do you do that work? Oh, you love connecting with clients? How much time do you spend connecting with clients? 10% of your time? Man, if you were doing it 20%, maybe we'd even make more money. How do I figure out we're going to give you a couple more hours a week so you can do that work? Exponentially helps all productivity on all the other work that you do. And if you need data to back this up, look at Google with their 20% program. They have been doing this 20% program for 10, 15 years now, maybe even longer. They give their staff one day a week or a fifth of their time to pursue whatever they want, whatever following their curiosity, as long as it helps Google. What has come from that program? AdSense, where they make all their money, Google Meet, and Gmail. Hello?
Wow. From
the Google 20. So again,
that's awesome.
Again, we can't give a fifth of our time to our staff. I have a small business. I get it. You can give them an extra hour. You can give them an extra 2 hours to be like, solve this problem in a playful, experimental way, in a brand new way. And I'm going to give you the freedom to do it and trust and actually give the freedom and don't judge them and see where they play in the playground and see where it takes you. You're probably more likely to come up with an answer that way than shaming them into trying to figure something out and like forcing them to brainstorm, you know, ideas.
There's so much shame. You just mentioned that in corporate America.
There's so much.
And you use the word experimental. And there really isn't much experimental aspects of corporate America usually.
And what's crazy, though, is every one of those corporate, every one of those corporations started off in someone's garage as an experiment.
Yeah. That's when the great things happen. Because you've got nothing to lose.
Like, think about brainstorming sessions now in corporate America. Before the pandemic, you would get in a box room, sit at a box table. You have an hour to brainstorm ideas. Go. That is the worst way to brainstorm. And the whole time you're brainstorming, people are like poo-pooing all your ideas. Yeah, that's a horrible idea. That's not a playful place to come up with innovative ideas. You could do the totally different one where everyone maybe hops on their phone. Do this now that you're remote. Everyone hops into the meeting from their phone and everyone's going to go walk we're all going to walk while we're doing our meeting. Wherever you're doing, I want you to walk or exercise or do something active during this brainstorming meeting, right? There's so many other creative ways in which we're doing it, but instead we keep doing the antiquated ways that have not worked and are no longer working or serving us.
So true. It actually made me think about how there's so much bias in idea creating that if you don't like a particular person, you kind of shut it down. Yep. So I actually think what would be really cool is before the meeting, everyone writes down their idea, like the core idea. Uh-huh. And you put it in, let's say, a hat. And everyone picks it out and you read it. And you don't know who it is.
I love that.
And you read the idea. And then each person reads a different person's. I mean, it could be theirs, but you never know. But, it, you know, it depends what they pick out. And then there's no bias. You don't know who did it. And you really right. can think about it.
Or
I think that would be kind of cool, actually.
Yes. Or you could yes and the meeting. Hey, guess what? We're brainstorming. No bad ideas. Which means every idea goes on the board. Oh, but I don't like Sam's ideas. He comes up with the worst. Who cares? Every idea goes up on the board. Because in design thinking, that's what they do. They just put everything on the board. And then afterwards, they circle the things that most resonate with them. But sometimes yeah. you have to actually go to the extreme and have a crazy idea in order to figure out the actual idea that comes to mind.
Right. You know?
And then I think the other thing that we have to look at too is we need to stop looking at the 8-hour workday in such the antiquated way that we look at it. Because first off, the 8-hour workday has not changed since 1926. No one's questioned why we do it for 8 hours. It's just what we're supposed to do. But when they've done studies on how many actual hours people can do quality work at their job, 2 hours, 51 minutes. Hmm. Yet our day has increased to 8.8 hours, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So what is happening for 6.5 hours? What are people doing with the rest of their time when they're doing mediocre work? Really stupid meetings, you know, dumb emails, making up reports to prove the work that you're doing. How many people do you know are doing work to prove the work that they're doing? Right? How many meetings are just a place for someone to talk so they sound busy? Like, we really have to look at this, even like looking at meeting lengths. Why are they an hour long? They don't have to be an hour long. They can be 5 minutes. They can be 17 minutes. You just do a favor. You want to do a favor to the busiest people at your company? End the meeting when it needs to end. Like, run short meetings. You know, and if you could just be like, we're going to do this meeting until we solve this problem, done. The meeting's done once we solve it. No, we're not adding anything else onto this. So much, you would save time, energy, and people wouldn't feel meetings are a waste. Meetings are a waste right now because we all know that it's a lot of BS at these places.
Yeah.
So can we stop doing that?
Now, I started to think about the use of play for candidates, like job seekers. Uh-huh. How can they work play into the process to make them stand out?
So that's a great question. So first off, you should be really asking yourself, not like, I need to get the next job, so I just need to apply as much as possible. Instead, be like, what is it that you actually makes you come alive, right? Like, I actually ask this experiment for a lot of candidates, you know, or clients that I'm working with, where I have them reach out to their friends and I ask them reach out to 3 to 5 of their closest friends and ask these two questions. What value do I bring to your life? Like, why are we friends? Like, what do I do for you? Because I think a lot of times we don't know what we do for people. And yeah, then the second question is like, when have you seen me most alive? You know, when have you seen me most playful, most creative, most excited? And this is based off the quote from Howard Thurman, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive. Because what the world needs is for more people to come alive. So identify that, ask those questions to 3 to 5 of your friends, get all of that, write it all down, the patterns, everything, start looking at all of it. And you'll start to realize, oh, that is the work that I love to do most. And have that first drive the process. Then second, identify the companies or people that would support that type of work. And then hop in on LinkedIn. And here's the amazing thing about LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. You can find out so much about people on these platforms. Right now, I just made a video the other day where I don't know how many DMs you get from LinkedIn where someone's like, you want to 10X your business or let me help you get the next job. It's just like slimy LinkedIn messages that you know they've copied and pasted and you're like, ew, gross. Like, just get them away from me. But if someone actually wrote me, if someone did research and was just like, I saw something you said back in October of 2020 about this topic. And I think, like, here's my thoughts on it. And you just kind of displayed your work to a department head or someone that you actually potentially want to work with in the future. Or maybe you just email them and you just compliment them on, like, I really love the work that you're doing. Can you tell me more about that type of work? And you just had a human conversation with people. That would probably, and you did that per day? If you sent four of those emails per day for, like, the next month, that's over 100 emails of now you building relationships with people. You're going to have more of a likelihood of getting a job that way than currently just applying to jobs randomly, you know, and just submitting your application everywhere. Like, that doesn't help, actually. That's what everyone else is doing. You want to stand out, then actually do the research, really identify what you appreciate or love about that company or about the people working in that company. And explore that, follow that curiosity. And I'm telling you, it's gonna take you to a better place.
So true. All right. So I want to know, what was your worst career moment?
Oh. My worst career moment, and this was the shift. I was at Kaiser Permanente in California. My sister was visiting me with her nephews, which I loved, and I wanted to spend all the time, and we were going to go to Yosemite. And I had worked, I had talked to my boss about working early so I could leave early to hang out with them. And my work was suffering because, frankly, I hated it. I think it was like at a recruitment office, just doing data entry. It was just painful. So I remember when my boss basically turned to me and was just like, you can't leave early and you have to get all this work done. And if you don't, you know, we're going to have to go another route. And I remember when she said, we're going to have to go another route, like in that corporate speak.
Yeah.
And I remember going downstairs, calling my ex-girlfriend or my girlfriend at the time and then being like, yeah, I think I'm going to quit. And then I called my friend Harrison and he hated his job and he was like, yeah, quit. And they both gave me good advice. They were like, first get some references and then go ahead, quit. So I went back up and then I went right up to my boss and I was like, you're absolutely right. You should go another route. And I took off my lanyard and I was like, work's in the cupboard. I'm like, peace. And of course it was so dramatic and like really irresponsible. And I was in my 20s and everything. So I hear that, but it was such a clear delineation for me of like, I sold my soul for $40,000 a year and benefits. And like, whether that's that number's 40 or 70 or 120 or 200, like when did you sell your soul to pick a mediocre job?
Yeah.
And I finally remember that line where I was just like, not anymore, man, not anymore. And I remember as I was walking out, people at that same company were turning to me and be like, what are you doing, Jeff? Why are you leaving? And I'm like, you've told me to leave. You said yourself you want to quit, but haven't. And I'm like, I'm just following what you've been complaining about forever, right? I'm just following that. So, and that was the most liberating thing because that's when I found my play job after that is I quit.
Oh, okay.
I was unemployed for 3 months. I had no idea what I was doing and I'm like struggling. And then this appeared, you know, and then I made it into a thing because I was like, never do I want to go back to that corporate space where I feel I have to compromise who I am. I want to get paid, as my friend Stephen Worley says, I want to get paid to be me. That's it.
Right.
I just want to be paid to be myself. Can we just do that? And that has been my pursuit ever since. And it's so much more rewarding than having to compromise who I am.
And that is such a difficult thing for people to do in corporate America because Absolutely. The way it's created, the institution itself, it's very difficult to be authentic, to belong, true belonging, not fitting in, because fitting in is, you know,
exactly. Again,
groupthink herd. It's really, really hard. And I don't, it's just difficult. And I think, as I said before, I think individually we know logically what we need to do, but somehow collectively we're not able to do it.
Right. And I'm not suggesting people just go ahead and quit their jobs.
No,
the love of their life or, you know, or whatever. But I think you have to be asking yourself a question that I really love that Viola Davis asked, which is, you know, you either claim who you are or you end up chasing your worth for the rest of your life. What are you, with each decision we're making, we're choosing that. So what decision are you making right now? To chase your worth, to impress your boss, to impress someone else that you won't care about in a year? Or are you actually in this one decision claiming who you are, like doing the thing that you want to do, identifying what you want to do, right? That doesn't mean you have to do these grandiose gestures, but you can start like figuring out like, what is it that drives me? And I want to do just a little bit more of that work. And whether you're doing that and then doing like a side hustle that's bringing you happiness, because even if you're doing that side hustle that's bringing you happiness, that might help out all of the other work that you're doing, right? Or you're simply carving out some more time at your job now that you're working from home, trying to figure out and identifying what is the work that makes me come alive and just doing a little bit more of that so that actually fills your soul. Like, follow that curiosity, because you know, we have to learn from the dying, right? Like, one of the biggest regrets of people on their deathbed is, I wish I had the courage to live the life that I wanted to live, not the life that others expected of me. Right. Don't get at the end of your life and be like, oh man, I was at that job for 50 years. And then I found out 49 years in, they didn't really care that much about me.
No.
Why wait that long?
Everyone's indispensable.
And why spend more time figuring out what you want instead of just like trying to cater to what everyone else wants? And I love what Elizabeth Gilbert says. She says personal transformation doesn't happen until you get tired of your own BS. And it's just like, what BS are you telling yourself right now?
Yeah.
Back in March of 2020, I was telling myself I didn't have time to make videos. And then quarantine happened. It was like, guess what? You have all the time in the world. You don't have anything else you have to do. I've probably made 150 videos in the last like 8-9 months. Maybe that's
awesome.
But more importantly, I've built up this resilience to not like feel awkward about it, because I'm like, it's not that bad. So what is that BS that you've been telling yourself? And when you actually dive into that inner child, that inner curiosity, when you actually allow yourself to get bored, because you actually have to get bored, meaning shut off Netflix, stop looking at social media. I'm talking about for like 1 to 2 hours, not forever. But right. And you actually get bored because your best ideas came when you were a kid, when you were bored, and you start listening to that inner curiosity, that inner child, it's going to whisper something to you that is both really exciting and really scary. And I recommend you follow that curiosity and see where it takes you, because there's an adventure on that other side of fear.
So true. And I think in our minds, we build things up to make it more negative. Studies show, because you know, you're a positivity coach or speaker, we tend to focus on the negative rather than the positive.
Well our brains
are like, what's
good?
The worst thing that can happen? Like, I feel like we say you got to take risks, right? It's like, it's risky if I do this. Why is it risky? Why is it any more risky than something else? We're just building it up in our mind that it's more risky.
Right, right.
You know, why is going for this job more risky than this job? What's the difference? Like, why does it matter?
Well, it's interesting that you ask that, because like, why is it more risky to go for this job that is just like, I feel meh towards this job I really want? Because that job I really want, if I don't get it, I'm going to be really disappointed.
Right.
You know, like that's the thing that people fear. And I get that. But the thing is, and you know, we learned a lot of this in positive psychology is don't think of the best case scenario and the worst case scenario. Think of the most likely scenario, right? Our minds are geared towards a negativity bias. Our actual rational mind, our inner critic, is there to protect us from all the dangers of the world. So you can't use your rational mind to take risks with. Because that rational mind is there for protection only. It's your intuition that actually is where risk-taking is, where play is, where all the adventures is. So you can't like, you can't think your way out of, you know, like a situation that feels risky. You actually have to start listening to that inner like superhero to actually get you out of that rut.
Makes sense. So before you mentioned COVID, what can people do or companies do during this time to introduce more play into, I don't know, the workplace?
Now I think the first step is coming from a place of shared humanity, right? Like, I think we constantly are trying to rush everything and get back to normal. And it's like, none of this is normal. This hasn't happened in 100 years, dude. Like, many of your staff might have had someone that died from this.
Yeah.
Like, why are we trying to make them so productive during this time? Can we come with a certain level of compassion and shared humanity right now and just be like, how are you doing? Can we have more of those conversations? You know, one of the best team leaders I know, he has lunch with his staff every couple days and they don't talk about work. That's it. That's what he's doing for culture, is just having lunch and just shooting the shit, just talking about whatever they want to talk about, you know, because he knows that's important to people. You know, another thing that that team leaders can do is they can take the time right now to identify the languages of appreciation of their staff. How does your staff like to receive, you know, do they like gifts? You know, sweet, they like gifts. Why not give out bonuses instead of at the end of the year, spread out the bonus throughout the year. And anytime they do anything that's slightly good, give them a little bit of that bonus. Boom. Oh, do they like words of affirmation? Give them praise in front of their colleagues and praise to other departments, just in case in the future they want to move up and they want to move to other departments. Do they like acts of service? Oh, do you know that they're like, maybe their wife is pregnant right now? Give them some time to be like, hey, I know something's going on at home. Here's some time. I'll take over some of your work so that you can actually do other things. Do they like quality time? I was just talking to someone the other day where you can keep someone from leaving a job, reducing turnover with certain people by simply having lunch with them once every 2 weeks. That's it. Not even like, you know, thinking of all these other hoops you need, just simply taking some time to be like, how are you doing? Let's have a talk. I want to check in with you every 2 weeks, figure out not only what you're doing for this company, but what are we doing for you to help you out, right?
Right.
Like, you can do all of those things. We need to be caring more about our staff, because our staff is what is keeping this business afloat right now. And instead, what I'm seeing a lot of companies do is they're just acting scared. They're not sharing what's happening at, you know, with the company. They're not being transparent about the financial predicament of the company. Everyone knows what's happening on the outside, you know, and then the whispers of like, I think this person's leaving, or I think my boss is leaving. That's not a healthy, psychologically safe environment for people to connect and want to stay. But if you as a team leader was like, look, we're going through some financial straits. I can't share everything with you, but what I can share is this, you know, this is where we're at right now. You know, I'm in it with you. We're trying to figure this out together, but I have your back. And hey, if you really feel like you need to move to the next job, I'll even write your recommendation letter. I remember telling that to a staffer once, of being like, I got you. If I know you have a dream job of working, you know, for this other company and you have an opportunity, I got you. I'll write that recommendation letter. They ended up interviewing with that other company and then coming back to our company. Why? Because even though they loved that company, they didn't feel trust towards that. But the fact that I was willing to be like, I'm going to do this for you, that doesn't help me out at all, but I'm looking out for you, man, that builds a huge amount of trust, right? And then the other part that I think we have to lead from is like, stop shaming your staff to get their work done. It's just not working.
Yeah.
or it might work in the short term. But if you scream at them as to why their second quarter numbers are not doing well, and then let's say they get them up, that doesn't mean their third and fourth quarters are going to do well, because you're just going to have to then scream at them again for third and fourth quarter, which takes a ton of energy out of you. Why would you even want to do that? Right. So like, we have to reframe how we want to work going forward, because the way in which we've been doing it has not been working.
So as an employee, right, you feel more isolated now, you may be going more inward, you might not have as much motivation. What can a person do during this time to become self-motivated?
I think they have to identify the work that makes them come most alive. I think they have to take a look at your entire work week. Look at all the work that you do, write it all down and be like, is there any work that actually excites me? And if there's nothing that's on there, then figure something out and then reach out to your boss and be like, I want to do this project for 1 to 2 hours a week. You know, here's a really great example of this, right? So TikTok, really famous app, you know, Washington Post last year, you know, started making TikToks. This guy, this random guy in the Washington Post started making them. He was having so much fun. And what was happening was Gen Zers, Zennials, Gen Xers that would have never thought of subscribing to the Washington Post all of a sudden started being like, what's this newspaper? I've never even, like most Gen Zers don't even read newspapers. Yeah. But they were like, yo, who's this guy making these hilarious TikToks on the Washington Post? And now it is the most well-known news source on TikTok, you know, because of this one guy. You know, the Buffalo Bills assign these interns, these 20-year-olds, to be like, hey, make whatever TikToks you want. Just like do whatever you want as long as it builds up more of a fan base for our Bills fan, you know. And these two guys went up. They got a whole floor to themselves and just made the most ridiculous videos. And what happened? All of a sudden, Buffalo Bills started getting more revenue, more fans, just because they allowed their staff to play more. So what is the play that you can do at your job and then figure out like how can I tell my boss if I can do that? And if it's not like a play thing, maybe it's just a new way of approaching a project. You know that the ways in which we approach projects in the past has been super boring or very antiquated. And, you know, a lot of people are like, well, we've always done it this way, so we should always do it this way. And you have a new idea that pops in your head. Go to your boss and be like, give me 2 weeks to approach this problem in a brand new way. And just let's just see if it works. And if it doesn't, then I'll go back to doing it the regular way. But just give me a chance. And then, you know, and then for the bosses, you know, or the team leaders on this, give them that chance. Give them the chance to experiment. More experimenting, less shame at work, and just see where that goes.
So true. I think so many people are even nervous to even approach their bosses. Like they may want to, but it's like, it's a big to do. Like, how do I approach them? How do I do it? Am I going to be fired? Are they going to think that I don't like my job? Like what's, you know, again, as you said, it's based out of fear. It's based out of fear.
And the thing is I can't guarantee that you won't get fired, right? But like if you came up to your boss and was just like, I have a great idea of how we can approach this problem differently, that doesn't seem like it's a viable event. You know, that just says, yeah, you know.
Exactly.
So it's again, it's just like just try a small experiment of asking, right? Yeah. Or maybe if you're not comfortable enough doing it yet, ask some of your colleagues and do it as a group and approach your boss together, yeah, right? But just like start being more open to exploring where your curiosity takes you. Own that growth mindset, because that fixed mindset that adults have been doing for so long, that's where all the suffering is. The reason why 2020 was so tough for a lot of people, in addition to all, you know, the death and the loss and like, and you know, so many businesses going out of business, but also people were so fixated on what they thought 2020 was going to be. 2020 was going to be the year for so many people, right? This is a year I was going to 10X my business. This is a year I was going to get promoted. This is a year I'm going to get married, you know? And then when that stuff didn't happen, they were not able to let that go. And if you can learn one thing from kids is when they fall down, they don't think about like, why did I fall down? No. If I walk again, will I fall down again? Like they just don't ruminate about it. They just let it go and move on to the next thing. And the quicker you can let go of what your expectations are of 2021 are, and instead just be like, I'm just going to experiment and see where this takes me, the more likely you'll be successful. And if you need to wonder why would I want to do that? Think about your life. You've planned it all out in a linear way, but if you look back at your life, none of it is linear. So why are you continuing to plan out your life in a linear way? Just experiment, ride on the roller coaster and see where it goes.
So very true. So very true. Well, thank you. It was very, valuable. I know the audience is going to definitely walk away with some amazing information, and maybe it will motivate them to have a little play in their life and be happier at work, because we do spend so much time at work. It's like our lives, right?
Yeah.
So might as well enjoy it. Don't be a martyr.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you're going to like every little thing that you're going to do, right? But on the overarching theme should be that you should enjoy what you're doing, right? Well, there might be some tasks that you might not like, which is okay, right? Not everything is sexy and you love doing it, but it's part of the job. But I think from a macro level, you should enjoy it.
And can I say this last thing to your listeners? Yeah. You know, as I love to Goodwill Hunt people a lot. So, you know, do you remember Goodwill Hunting?
Oh, yeah. That's like the best
thing. So you know it well. So for anyone that doesn't, you know, Matt Damon's a genius in the movie. Ben Affleck is his best friend. At the end of the movie, Matt can get any job he wants at any think tank in the world and make hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars. But instead, they're at a construction site and they're working construction. And Ben asks him, when are you going to take one of these high paying jobs? And Matt's like, I'm not, you know, I'm going to work construction, and we're going to raise our kids together. We're going to watch them play baseball at Foley Field. You know, that's just what I'm going to do. And Ben turns to him and he goes, if I see you here in 20 years, I'm going to kill you. Like, I'm literally going to kill you. And he goes, what? I owe it to myself? And he's like, no, you don't owe it to yourself. You owe it to me. And you owe it to everyone else here, because anyone would give anything. I mean, anything to have what you have. You're sitting on a winning lottery ticket and you're too scared to cash that in. And I truly believe each and every one of your listeners is sitting on a winning lottery ticket. And the thing is you're not cashing it in for yourself. This is not about you, ironically enough. It's about the fact that somebody can't do their thing until you do your thing, right? You know, if you don't start this podcast again, if you don't relaunch this podcast, I can't be here, right? You take a risk. So now I'm here to take a risk. So the person that's listening is like, dude, there's someone waiting for you to take a risk so they can do their risk. But you have to cash in on that winning lottery ticket. And that winning lottery ticket is the thing that actually makes you come most alive. So can you please explore that? Can you please search for that? Because my biggest question to you is, are you ready to show up? Because the world needs you to show up right now.
Bravo. That is so awesome. So awesome. Thank you. All right. So this is what we're going to do next. Really quick. All right. Like off the cuff, you are in a contest.
Yeah.
Speaking of lottery. And you have the potential to win $50 million.
Yeah.
But you have to answer these three questions perfectly. Okay. To the best of your ability, you want to answer it the best. Okay. First question.
Yeah.
$50 million. What is the one piece of advice that you would give to someone in corporate America in order for them to get to the next level or to just get them unstuck?
Yeah. Remind yourself that nobody knows what they're doing. We're all making it up as we go along. So all those experts, all your bosses or leaders, they have no idea what they're doing either. So you are actually more of an expert of yourself than anybody else. So just follow that, because you actually are more badass than you ever thought you were.
Okay, cool. Next question. In order to improve corporate America, what would be the one cure that you would provide to improve it?
Well, of course it would be play, but it would be bringing humanity back to work. That would be it. It would be, what are you doing to help your staff do the best work that they can, because that will be the answer to you having a successful company. Zappos is a perfect example of doing that. They invested in their staff first before their customers, but investing in their staff brought them so much, not just dividends, but just so much more success.
Awesome. Okay, last question. If you could cure everyone's career mistakes on this planet, what type of advice would you give them?
Stop shaming yourself. Stop beating yourself up for regrets or things you've done in the past. and instead identify what your strengths are and double down on that, because the world needs more of that. And frankly, the shame spiral is not really helping you out.
Awesome. Okay, good advice. All right, so we're closing up. Jeff, thank you so much for being a guest. How can people contact you? I will have the contact information, you know, as part of this podcast, but what's the best way they can contact you?
Best way to reach me is rediscoveryourplay.com, and then simply click on the Let's Play button, where I have a bunch of play exercises you actually can do at work, or candidates can also do. And then you can also hop on a phone call with me, and we can figure out how we can infuse more play back into your workplace so that your company can kick more ass in this world.
Awesome. And anything you want to promote? Anything new coming up?
I just contributed to an article for Mashable called How to Stop Scrolling and Start Finding Joy in Play More. So I'll send you the link for that. But like, it's an awesome article about how you can actually let go of like indulging yourself with so much like social media and actually find play again.
Okay, good. All right, great. Well, thank you so much for being on Your Career Cure. It was awesome. I've learned a lot. And I think incorporating play into the workforce, into our careers, makes 100% sense. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.